Hello and welcome to Plenary Podcast, a chance to learn more about the 5th Plenary Council of Australia and the journey that the Church is on. I'm Gavin Abraham and I'm part of the Plenary Council's communications team. This is one of 4 episodes in which we unpack the preparation of the working document or the Instrumentum Laboris for the Plenary Council. The document is entitled Continuing the Journey and it's just been released. I'm speaking today with Archbishop Timothy Costello. He's the Archbishop of Perth and also the President of the Plenary Council. Archbishop Costello is also one of the members of the writing team for the Instrumentum Laboris. Archbishop, welcome to Plenary Podcast.
Thank you very much, Gavin. It's good to be with you and hello to everybody who's listening as well.
Now, Archbishop Costello, we're approaching 3 years since Pope Francis approved the Australian Bishops' plan to hold a Plenary Council. There have been periods of listening and dialogue, periods of listening and discernment, and among other things, a global pandemic that we've been dealing with. In some ways, the release of Continuing the Journey, I think you said this in the media release, is a bit of a reset or a catalyst for restarting the council journey after the postponement of the assemblies last year. Now, that's a bit of a long introduction, but Archbishop, as a starting question, how would you describe the place of the Instrumentum Laboris within the council journey?
Well, Gavin, as you've just mentioned in your introduction, we've decided to call the Instrumentum Laboris Continuing the Journey. And I think that this pretty well sums up the role of this document in our preparations for the Plenary Council. I realise that to speak of a journey towards the Plenary Council can sound a little bit now like a cliche. And as you point out, the journey's already 3 years long, and indeed much longer, if you think about when the bishops first started to think about this idea, which perhaps goes back as far as 15 years ago. However, calling it a journey is much more than just a cliche, because we are, in fact, on a journey. And like any journey, we're discovering new things as we go along. We've had periods, as you've said, of listening and dialogue, periods of listening and discernment, the writing of those 6 thematic papers which flowed out of the listening, dialogue and discernment, and now we have the publication of the working document, the Instrumentum Laboris. I'd have to say that it's my hope, and I think the experience of many people indicates that it's not just a forlorn hope, that each step along the way has been an invitation to the whole Catholic community here in Australia to delve more deeply into what it means to belong to the Catholic Church. This is the church that many of us proudly call our church, and that is a beautiful thing. But what we're really being invited to do is to recognise that it is also, first and foremost, the Lord's church. God has called us into the church, and now God is inviting us to work together to find ways of helping our church, the Lord's church, to be more deeply faithful to the fundamental mission and vocation which the Lord has given to us. And one way of talking about that is to say that we're called to be together a living and effective and unambiguous sign of God's presence and action in our world. Now, with the publication of the Instrumentum Laboris, we now have another step, another document, which is inviting us into an ever deeper reflection, both as individuals, but also as community of faith, communities of faith, whether they be big or small communities, about what it actually means for us today to be the faithful Church of Christ at this moment in our history.
And, you know, obviously one community of faith is the community of the bishops, and the bishops called the council, very mindful that it was a council for the Church of Australia, not a plenary council for the bishops. And in many ways, the council has become, you know, one of the most co-responsible or the most sort of democratic gatherings the Church has had here, with including seeking additional lay people to be able to be involved with the council assemblies and various other steps along the way, that, you know, 200,000 people, predominantly lay people, who fed into the listening and dialogue. But the bishops do have a particular role to play. In this, they did have to ask Pope Francis for the permission, and that came through. But can you speak a bit about the bishops and their role in the development of the Instrumentum Laboris? We've spoken with some of the other writers about the various influences, and how did the bishops speak into the process of preparing the Instrumentum Laboris?
I'd respond, Gavin, probably by first of all acknowledging what you've said, that the way in which this council has been imagined, not just by the bishops, but by the whole church, is as an experience of what, you know, we're becoming used to now calling a synodal church. So, yes, there's been an enormous amount of consultation, and that's vitally important for the work of this council and for the success of the council, if I can use that word. But if we were to think just for a little bit about the bishops themselves, they've actually contributed in a number of significant ways to the writing of this working document, this Instrumentum Laboris. Firstly, and in a sense, obviously, I suppose, one of them, me, has been a member of the writing team, which, of course, as people who've listened to these podcasts would know, had three other members: Trudy Dantas, a married laywoman from Melbourne; Daniel Lang, a married layman and father of two young children in Sydney; and Father Kevin Lenehan, a priest of the Ballarat Diocese and a theologian and the priest in charge, the master we call him, of Catholic Theological College in Melbourne. So the four of us were the ones who put the document together. But in writing that document, which went through a number of drafts, the writing team, most people would remember, has used as its launching pad those six discernment papers, which had been prepared following on from the listening and dialogue and listening discernment processes. Now, each of those six writing teams also had one or two bishops as members of those teams, which in each case were, in fact, comprised mainly of lay Catholic men and women. On top of that, on a number of occasions, the bishops were invited to suggest additional themes which they thought perhaps needed to be highlighted in the Instrumentum Laboris, or which arose out of the consultation processes but which hadn't made their way explicitly enough into the Instrumentum Laboris. And the bishops also had an opportunity to review the early draft of the document and provide comments and feedback to hopefully enrich the document as we came towards its final form. So they're sort of particular moments where the bishops had specific opportunities to contribute. But in reality, of course, each bishop in his own local diocese will have been engaged in the whole process of preparing for the plenary council and all that that meant and all that that then contributed to the ongoing process of discernment, which in a sense has culminated, not as a final thing, but as an interim thing, in the document that we're now calling the Instrumentum Laboris. So they've been very involved, but in such a way as to be part of the whole community of the Church in Australia, which has been involved in preparing this document.
Hmm. I mean, you do have the dual role of being the President of the Plenary Council and also the Archbishop of Perth. I mean, thinking of that community of faith, the Archdiocese of Perth, where do you see the Instrumentum Laboris sitting within the discerning life of the Archdiocese? I mean, obviously, the document is for the Plenary Council, but what in the document do you, as the Archbishop of Perth or as a Bishop of Australia, think the document holds for those considering the life and faith and mission of a diocesan community?
Yes, look, it's a very important question. And you're right, I have a few roles in the journey of the Plenary Council, and one is to be the President, but of course I am still the Archbishop of Perth. And deeply engaged, I hope, with the local Catholic community here in our preparation for the Plenary Council. So really I can only speak about what happens here, but I imagine that there are all kinds of different ways in which various dioceses are engaging with this journey, because each diocese around the country has its own unique character. It has its own particular context, which is different, of course, say, from a rural diocese diocese to a large metropolitan archdiocese. And of course, again, each diocese has its own resources, or in some cases, lack of resources, which it can bring to bear in preparing for the council. Here in Perth, I would see the Instrumentum Laboris really as a major catalyst for reigniting interest in the work of the Plenary Council. Because we had to postpone the first assembly for 12 months, I think it was inevitable that for some people, even an awareness that the Plenary Council was happening might have faded a little bit into the background. The publication of the Instrumentum Laboris will, I hope, bring the Plenary Council back into people's consciousness. As you would know, and as many people would be aware, the facilitation team, headed up by Lana Turvey-Collins, has already produced a simple reflection sheet to accompany the Instrumentum Laboris. And I'm sure that over the next few months, other resources will emerge, will be made available, not just to the delegates, importantly to them, of course, but also to the wider Catholic community. So I would hope that many of those people who grouped together now quite a while ago to enter into the listening and dialogue and listening discernment processes might get back together again and take the Instrumentum Laboris to prayer and to reflection. It's interesting, I think, to see how widely the Instrumentum Laboris has been noticed, commented on around the Catholic world. And in some of those comments, the point has been made that the document presents many challenges and many possibilities for renewal in the church in Australia. And it's interesting that people from overseas notice that straight away. Because, of course, that's the point. The Instrumentum Laboris has not provided and never intended to provide any answers. It hasn't sought to control or limit the discussion. And it certainly doesn't pretend in any sense at all to be the final word on anything. But it's a further step forward. And as I said earlier, an invitation, and that's the way we're looking at it here in Perth, an invitation to ongoing and, I would hope, ever deepening discernment about the fundamental question of the Plenary Council, which in view of so much that's happened in the last 12 or 18 months is becoming even more urgent. What is God actually asking of us here in Australia at this time?
The Plenary Council, the last one in Australia, was in the 1930s. So
yes, long time ago.
I suspect there are some people still alive who may have vague recollections of it, but obviously few, and none of the serving bishops at the moment. So this is a unique and truly historic process for the church in Australia. And your personal reflections or your reflections from speaking with other bishops about how you are individually or collectively preparing for, obviously the assemblies are a point in time and a much longer journey, but preparing for the assemblies and preparing for those two gatherings, October this year and July next year, and what comes from that, I guess.
Well, you're right. It is a long, long time since we last had a plenary council in Australia. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that ours will only be the third plenary council anywhere in the Catholic Church since the Second Vatican Council. So it's something new for us, as it is for most of the church. And so there's a lot of interest in it. And in many ways, we're feeling our way forward. We're learning how to do it as we go along. But I'd say that right from the beginning of what is turning out to be really not just a long but also a very complex process, we've based ourselves, when I say we, I mean the whole church in Australia, we've based ourselves on the conviction that what we're trying to do is engage with that idea of synodality, which Pope Francis speaks about so often. It's as if we are coming to understand more and more a process which calls everybody in the church to listen. Now, this is not new, certainly not new as a theory or a concept about the church, but it might be rather new for many of us in terms of the way we've gone about our lives as Catholics. And it seems to me that the nature of the listening that we're being called to is something a little different. And it's certainly not as simple as it sounds. Like many people, I've thought about this a lot, and I've often spoken about it in this way, that we're seeking to listen to God by listening to each other. That's one of the early ways in which we started to speak about the plenary council. But the challenge is how to listen for the voice of the Spirit in the multiplicity of voices that we're hearing. I think that's really important. And to realise that it's not, as I said, as simple as it sounds. It reminds me a little bit of that story in the Book of Kings that many people will be familiar with, when Elijah is in the cave and God passes by. And we're told in that story that God wasn't in the earthquake and he wasn't in the raging fire and he wasn't in the roaring wind, but in the still, silent voice. And Elijah covered himself as God went past. Of course, the Spirit can also, as the story of Pentecost reminds us, be in the rushing winds and the tongues of flame. But this is the challenge of discernment. This is the art of discernment that we're all being called to. And it's an art, I think, that we have to just practice and cultivate in the hope that the more we do it, the better we'll get at it. And I think this is really at the heart of the whole journey of the plenary council. In the preparation phase, what we're calling, if you like, the celebration phase, which starts in October and then carries on, as you say, till the Second Assembly in July next year. And then most importantly, in the implementation afterwards, when we try to, having listened and discerned, put things into practice in our local churches. I think it's really important for us to remember that it was the bishops who decided to convene the plenary council. We're deeply committed as a body of men to this, and we're excited about it. I think I could speak for the bishops when I say that we're very confident that the decision to convene the council was as a result of the leadings of the Holy Spirit. And for that reason, even though, like many other Catholics in the church in Australia, we're uncertain as to the outcome, I think we can be confident that as long as we do stay focused on this art of discernment, of this listening for the voice of the Spirit coming through what we're doing in the plenary council, this can only bring good to the church.
And how might you encourage Archbishop Tim? You've spoken about what might happen in Perth. This idea, you know, there is the reflection guide that people might engage with in seeking to unpack the Instrumentum Laboris. It's, you know, it's 70 odd pages. It's not a great tome, but it is something that can be a process of discernment over, you know, a series of months leading towards the assemblies and beyond. I think the document's currency is hardly time limited, the work that went into it. So I guess for you, either personally or for the church, how do you see the next few months unfolding as we lead up to the first assembly in October?
Well, I do think the Instrumentum Laboris needs to be not the only thing that is part of our ongoing journey towards October, but certainly very much at the heart of our ongoing journey towards October. You make the point that it's not a weighty tome, but the first version certainly was. I think the present version is about one-third the length of the original, which possibly due to my tendency when I write was much more complex than it needed to be. So, but it's I think, I hope, an accessible document, and it's one that I hope, if you ask me how I see it unfolding in the next few months, I really hope that many Catholics will pick it up, take the trouble to read it. Might take one or two settings to do that, but take the trouble to read it. But most especially, I think, to read it both with an open heart, but also in an atmosphere of prayer. It's not a perfect document. And as I said a moment ago, it's not in any word meant to be, doesn't pretend to be the final word on anything. I'm always struck by something that Pope Francis said about the Instrumentum Laboris that was prepared for the Amazonian Synod. He spoke of the Instrumentum Laboris as what he called a martyr document, that is, something that's destined to die, something that's destined in a sense to be destroyed, so that something new can arise from it. And I think that is the role of the Instrumentum Laboris. It's there for people to sit with, to pray with, to enter into dialogue with individually, but hopefully also in groups right around the church, because the Instrumentum Laboris itself is the fruit of a great deal of prayer and reflection and discussion and discernment over a number of years. It's not just the thought of the four people who wrote it. It's the thought of all of the people who have contributed in all kinds of ways to the journey so far. But as I say, it's not the end. It's in no way the final word. It's simply an invitation to further reflection. I think it will have served its purpose if it encourages people to go back and revisit the hopes and dreams for the church which they first identified in the early stages of this journey, and then be open to the powerful guiding spirit of God, which won't leave us where we were 12 months ago or 6 months ago or even when we published the Instrumentum Laboris, but will lead us forward into places that perhaps we can't even imagine at the moment. When we gather for the first assembly in October, my hope is that the Instrumentum Laboris, along with all the other contributions to the journey of the Plenary Council so far, will have helped all the delegates to deepen their sense of openness to whatever God is asking of us. I go back to the fundamental question of the Plenary Council. What is God asking of us? And that's a difficult and challenging but also very exciting question for us to ponder. So I hope the Instrumentum Laboris is central to that whole process. I believe it can be. I think it can help us a great deal. As we move towards October, which now, as you and I talk today, is, 6 months away or something, not very far away at all. So, we've got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of thinking and praying and discerning and discussing still to do. Maybe the most important thing we've got to do is a lot of asking the Lord for a deepening of our faith so that we can trust that the Holy Spirit is at the heart of what we're doing and will lead us forward into the future that is the future God has in mind for the church.
That's great. Archbishop Costello, thanks so much for your time with Plenary Podcast.
Thank you, Gavin, very much for the opportunity.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of Plenary Podcast. Again, one of the four episodes we've recorded on continuing the journey, the Instrumentum Laboris, or the working document for the Plenary Council. You can visit the Plenary Council website at plenarycouncil.catholic.org.au to access the other episodes, to download the Instrumentum Laboris, and for other information on the Plenary Council journey. Thanks for your time.